behind the bench, on the floor, inside the locker room, and in the stands. We're everywhere.
Never back off.
With everything you need to know about the association, this is Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome to Hoops on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Finally back after a two-week hiatus. We were off because of the All-Star break, and then the Raptors actually had an extra day off compared to a lot of teams around the NBA. Didn't play until the Friday, Jonesy, after All-Star break. So we didn't have a chance really to compile much of a show last Thursday. So we felt, you know what? Best to take the 2 weeks off, come back strong, and we are jammed. We've got to get right to it because we have four interviews to bring to you tonight. And a lot of Raptor coverage over the course of the next hour as well. Toronto hoping to bounce back from a loss just a couple of nights ago as they fell to the Milwaukee Bucks in a battle of 1-2. Looking to get back on track on Friday night against the Charlotte Hornets before hitting the road for 5 straight against the Western Conference. We'll talk about that later on in the show. But we're going to start things off with a look at, well, the Raptors currently, but also kind of projecting to the future as well and looking at the offseason, no matter how far the Raptors go in the postseason, whether they're bounced in the first round or whether they go to the final or whether they win the championship again, a lot of decisions looming in the offseason. A number of topics and discussions that I got into with our colleague from Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca. We had a chance to do this interview a few days ago, so you might hear us reference the Raptors' record at the time, but obviously it's different now. But either way, the topics and the juice, the meat of this interview still holds up. We wanted to bring you this conversation right now, my chat with Michael Grange.
Michael, it's the unofficial second half. It's technically the last third of the season.
It's exactly the last third, isn't it?
It is.
27 times 3 equals 81, so
yes.
It's not. So, okay, screwed up.
Well, it's close enough. By my math, yes, we'll call that exact. What are you looking for? Forget what Nick Nurse and Masai Ujiri. What are you looking for from this team in the final, you know, 6-8 weeks?
Can they maintain some version of the pace they're at? Because, you know, I think as exciting as they've been in the first half and they've been through that stretch when everyone was hurt and they got through that 15-game winning streak, are they really a 40-15 team? And I think we're going to see, you know, you got this 4-game homestand out of the break, you know, some tough teams on it. But then, you know, your last 23 games. You got 14 on the road. You got the Lakers. You got Milwaukee 3 times in total.
Yep.
You got Utah. You got Denver, both on the road. And I think, you know, we'll see if a lot of the excitement around what these guys have done through 55 games, if we're having the same kinds of conversations as we come down the stretch in April.
What do you think the key is, or the keys are, to keeping it together and to kind of maintaining what they've built?
It's kind of boring, but I think can Kyle Lowry maintain his level right through to the end of the season and still have something left for the playoffs? Because, I mean, they've proven they can win without him, but we all know that if for any extended period, not having him, it just puts too much load on Fred. And, you know, I think, I mean, he is the fulcrum of this team. And there's been a lot of situations where he's had to really carry a heavy load. And, you know, so presuming he's available for the next 27 games, can he get through them and be playing at a high level and still have some gas in the tank come playoff time?
Do you think it matters what they're doing right now as much as it makes sense? Does it matter what they're doing with Gasol in terms of the extra rest to make sure that he's back and ready for the playoffs? I mean, does that hurt them at all that you're only going to have, you know, 8 to 12 games to kind of get him acclimated again going into the playoffs? And does that upset the chemistry, the rotation, et cetera, once he finally does return?
I don't think so, because in terms of him being ready and getting up to speed, I'm sure,
yeah,
10 or 12 games is enough, right? Like, I mean, he's, you know, he's going to need some, but I don't think he's going to need much more than that. In terms of chemistry and things like that, I presume it'll work out fine. Just because of how things worked out last year with him and Serge. Serge is the guy who pays,
yeah,
really. And in a way, for Serge Ibaka, going into a contract year, things have worked out almost perfectly, right? Like, he's coming off a championship. He's been proven to be able to be a, you know, almost a six-man caliber player coming off the bench. Can certainly start for any team in the league and be a near all-star caliber big. And so, like, he's got what he needed out of his contract year, right? Like, his market value has got to be close to an all-time high. And so, come the last 10 games of the year, if they need him to go back to the bench or do whatever they're going to do, I think he can – it's an easier conversation. It's probably worked out to his benefit the way everything shakes
out.
Well,
and part of the reason I bring it up, though, is and I don't know if you agree with this or not, as well as he has played this year, and as much as he has played well off the bench or as a starter, it seems like he has played a little bit better, at least a little bit better, as a starter as opposed to a second-unit guy. And playing, you know, 28, 30, 32 minutes as opposed to 18, 20, 22, suddenly now if Gasol's right back, boom, into the starting lineup, and you've been playing now as the primary starter, logging 30-plus a night for 2.5, 3 months, it might be an adjustment going back to a lesser role physically, let alone mentally.
Yeah, it might be. And also, I think it might raise some questions for Nick Nurse going, we've all seen the way Ibaka's evolved as a player. Like,
yeah.
He's a much more able and versatile offensive player than he was even a year ago. And he's certainly a much more, you know, even doubly so compared to 2 and 3 years ago. And so, you know, does it open avenues for them to play that double big lineup more and more and all of that? So I think, you know, there's going to be an adjustment. And as we said, Serge is going to be a guy who's going to have to probably adjust. But, you know, I think it all falls under the category of good problems to have, presuming, you know, Gasol can come back and get up to speed the way we all think he can.
All right, the bigger question is, and I guarantee I'm going to ask you this at least one more time, if not five more times, before the end of the year and certainly into the offseason, no matter how long the postseason run ends up being. Serge Ibaka, Marc Gasol, Fred VanVleet. How are they going to do this? Are they going to do this? What are they going to do? One, two, three, none. How does this all play out in the offseason? And how much does the regular season, but more specifically the postseason, play into these decisions?
I think that they'll bring at least two out of those three back without much problem.
I would assume you mean Fred and one big, or
Fred and one big, yeah.
Okay.
And I think and when you look at the market that's out there right now, if you're happy to make the mid-level exception, roughly $10 million, you know, I think there's going to be all kinds of opportunities. I think all three of those guys are worth more than that, and at that point, matching the opportunity with the money with the opportunity to win, and I think they're all guys who want to win, they're used to winning. That's going to be tough. And when you factor in, from the Raptors' point of view, what can you realistically spend this free agent money you're hoarding in 2021 on? What's really out there for you? I don't think this team looks like it's running out of gas anytime soon. And I would not be surprised if they try and look for ways to extend what they've established here rather than pivot and you know, on a fantasy of Giannis Antetokounmpo or whatever it might be.
Do they have to do Fred first and make sure he's locked up before they even think about either one of the two bigs? Because, I mean, it would seem like he's the most likely to have the potential to go elsewhere,
yeah,
if they don't back up the truck and pay whatever it's going to cost to keep him here.
Yeah, I don't know what the kind of the math is and the order.
Yeah.
You know, but in terms of priority, I guess it's probably Fred. He's the youngest of them, and he kind of matches with the younger half of their core. And yeah, I think there's probably maybe a little bit more demand for his services. But it was interesting talking to Fred, you know, the other day, and he was just saying how much he loves it here and how much,
yeah,
you know, how good they know they have it, how, you know, how good it is to win. And when you try and look at around the league and say, well, what's out there to match or be better than that, money aside, well, there's not much. You want to go play in New York right now the way it's going, or you want to go what looks like a long rebuild in Detroit. Okay. I mean, and you're capable, and there's no reason why you shouldn't or wouldn't want to do that. But I think I'd be surprised if there's, you know, I don't think he's going to leave here for money. So I don't think he's going to leave.
All right. So there you go. I don't even have to ask you directly. You don't think Fred VanVleet's leaving. So then let me ask you this. Do you feel comfortable asking or answering, I should say, who of the two bigs you think is coming back then, if you think only one is coming back?
I think the tricky one is Serge. I wouldn't be surprised, and I don't have any inside knowledge on this, but, you know, Marc Gasol, you look at the stage he is in his career, would he be comfortable playing on shorter-term deals, maybe one-year deals, you overpay him for a year, whatever it might be, you know, a bigger number for one-season deal. I think he might look at that. I don't know. I have no insight.
Yeah.
He's, you know, we all know his age and where he is professionally. I think Serge is a tougher one because, you know, he's got just where he is. He's not yet 30. He's playing the best basketball of his career. He's got to be wanting to look at like another solid 3-4-5 year contract, right? And are the Raptors comfortable with that in terms of term? I think that's going to be a little tougher sell. But again, it comes back to what's really out there for Serge Ibaka in the market. You know, he spent the first bunch of years in Oklahoma City. You know, he does want to go back to Oklahoma. You know, he loves Toronto. Like, he loves a big market. He loves the opportunities here. He loves the life here. And, you know, there's only a few markets in the NBA that can really match that. And so I think that's going to be his priorities. Can you win? And can you do it in a place that where you can kind of be alive off the court, so to speak? And so that's going to be a tough decision for him. I think it really comes down to what do they realistically – everyone talks about the free agent market in 2021. What do you really – like, LeBron's a free agent in 2021. I don't think he's coming to Toronto.
Right.
Right? And you kind of go on down that list. Is Paul George, is Kawhi Leonard coming back to Toronto? I mean, no, I probably not. He had a chance. So I think – you know, I think when reality really sets in, and the biggest variable here is probably if and when Giannis signs an extension this summer, then, you know, you probably pivot and go, okay, what can we do in-house?
That was my conversation one-on-one with Michael Grange. Quickly shifting attention, staying in the East, one of the teams that the Raptors are dealing with in that sort of 1-5, 1-6 battle in the Eastern Conference is the Indiana Pacers. They very well may end up being a first or second round opponent for the Raptors. To talk more about the Pacers, look at the East, the NBA overall. Jonesy, you had a chance to go one-on-one with the television voice of the Indiana Pacers, Chris Denari.
Chris, let's talk about the Pacers, a team much like the Raptors who people probably didn't expect them to be where they are. And with any luck and a few bounces here and there, the Pacers could be holding down a home court spot right now. I mean, we still got about 25, 26 games to go, but it's been a good year, and much of it without Victor Oladipo.
Oh, no question. I think the three teams to me in the East that are surprises would be Toronto, just because Kawhi left after winning a title. Miami has been very impressive. Yeah, I don't think anybody thought Miami would be where they are. And then the Pacers, had a great run through the first 50 games without Victor, hit a little bit of a wall to start the month of February. But I think all in, when you think 9, 10, 11 games over 500, you have to like where the Pacers are, trying to make that push here, knowing how important home court advantage is, because the last 4 years they've been in the postseason, lost to Toronto in 7, lost to Cleveland in 7, both without home court advantage, and then were swept by Cleveland and Boston. So I think the last 4 playoff years show how important it is to have home court advantage, and that's what the Pacers are striving for here late in the year.
Let me ask this, Chris. Would it be such that this team has gained experience that we all love to have home court, but they could easily win a Game 7 on the road? I mean, I look at that Cleveland series. Everybody gave them up for dead after the big loss, and they come back, win Game 6, and go back on the road for Game 7. Has this team garnered enough experience with Nate McMillan at the helm? And I think you guys have one of the best coaching staffs in the league, that they could get away and steal a Game 7?
I think so. I mean, it's ironic that you ask that, because here in the last month or so, they've been a better road team than they've been at home.
Right.
Uncharacteristically, they lost 5 straight at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. That hadn't happened in a number of years. So, no, I think with the group that they've put together, led by Malcolm Brogdon, and with Victor Oladipo coming back, I do think it is a team that can have success on the road. I think the most important thing in mid-April, you just want to be playing good basketball.
Yes, yes.
That's the most important thing, and that's what this team is trying to get to right now.
When I look at 3-6 in the East, I mean, Toronto sitting in the two-hole as we record this, it's like a minefield. There are landmines galore if you are in the 3, 4, 5, or 6 spot. Anybody could come out of those spots. And then, unfortunately, one of those winners is going to end up what looks like playing against Milwaukee. How we talk about home court, how important is it to try to navigate and maybe stay away from people when you get to playoff time?
Well, I think one of the things, the reason when you look at those teams ahead of the Pacers right now, they all have great home court records, and, yeah. and that could be an issue. Philadelphia's been really good at home, not very good on the road. Boston, really good at home. Miami, really good at home. So that puts a little bit more pressure on you to have home court advantage yeah. because how good those teams have been. You know, we live in Indianapolis, known for racing, and I feel like that 3-6,
yeah.
it's like teams are passing each other in turn two, and then they're getting to turn three, and then somebody else is in the lead. I really think that's how it's going to shake out in the next 2 months, is that even though you may be in third right now, you might be a week later in fifth, because if you lose two or three games in a row, your position could change.
With Chris Denari, the TV voice for the last 14 years of the Indiana Pacers, you talked about Victor Oladipo coming back. Victor and Malcolm Brogdon haven't had a lot of time together. Take me through what you're seeing now as they try to get it together heading for the playoffs in April.
Well, I've seen them get more comfortable. Again, he's only played 8 games, and he's only played 5 in the starting lineup, and so that time with Malcolm really has been limited. If you go back even to when he started practicing with the Pacers, he didn't spend a lot of time with the starters.
Right.
The Pacers were on a long road trip at the end of January. Victor didn't even travel with the team. They kept him back in Indianapolis to work out with the G League team. So he's not had a lot of reps with the starters. All of those reps are coming in game situation. It's not like you have 3 or 4 preseason games and then the first month of the season. You're throwing Victor in with the starting lineup right. into games 55 through 60. So
yeah.
I think we'll have a better feel of where this group is in a week or in a month. I think long-term, it can be a really good fit. I really think Brogdon and Oladipo will be one of the better backcourts in the league.
I don't think anybody wants to see the Pacers in the first round. And I look at their potential for improvement and what they have with these guys. When you think about some of the potential opponents and matchups, is there a team? I mean, you just talked about people passing each other at different parts of a race. Are there any matchups that you would look at and say, I don't like that matchup for the Pacers, or I do like that matchup for the Pacers? I mean, you probably have to play or beat whoever yeah. when you get through, but is there one that you might look at, Chris, that might be more favorable?
You know what's going to be interesting is to watch Miami, because that team now has changed a little bit from
yeah,
the team
with the
that
trade.
With
yeah.
the trade. With Iguodala coming and Jay Crowder, Solomon Hill. It's a little bit different look, and the Pacers will have a chance to see them before the regular season is done. I think Toronto presents a lot of problems for the Pacers with their length. Serge Ibaka is playing at just yeah. an unbelievable level right now. Every team you look at and you go, gee, do I really want to see them in a postseason environment? But this is a pretty confident team. The Pacers believe that for this group, and I think this group will be together for the next 2 to 3 years, to take the next step, that's to win a first-round series.
Yeah.
And so I just think they want to get in and take whoever comes and go from there.
A couple guys I want to hit on before we end here. First is T.J. Warren. I mean, I was laughing with the coaching staff. Bill Baino says we call him a walking bucket. How good has this guy been for the Pacers this year?
He's been fantastic. I mean, he's top 20 in field goal percentage, and, you know, most of those are mid-range shots,
yeah.
shots that –
the dreaded mid-range.
Yeah, the dreaded mid-range that most coaches don't want, but
right.
he is so good. He's so crafty around the basket. But I think the other thing is he's shown that he's a willing defender, and I give a lot of credit to Bill Baino and Dan Burke and Popeye and Nate for incorporating their defensive principles and getting TJ to buy in. And
yeah.
and he's done a really good job in that area. But we just call him the walking bucket maker, because he just finds a way to get the ball in the basket, and he's done it on a very consistent basis this year.
The last guy is Domas Sabonis. I was in Chicago for All-Star Weekend. I was really glad to see the kid rewarded. Man, does he play hard. He's a good young player, and he's got that old school feel to him with his work ethic and his toughness, the way he plays on the floor. Talk about his play, and then what you think he might have garnered from being around the best in the world in Chicago at the All-Star Weekend.
Well, there's no question he is a huge fan favorite in Indianapolis. Victor Oladipo told him when the trade was made for Paul George a couple of years ago, he goes, we will come to Indianapolis and the fans will love us. And there's no question.
Victor would know.
Yeah, they love Victor because of his time at Indiana, but they have welcomed Domas with open arms. He embodies everything that you want in a basketball player. Toughness, he's hard-nosed, he scores around the rim. But I just think being around the world's best will only make him want to be even
Absolutely.
Better. And this is a guy that's fifth in the league, I think, in double-doubles, averaging 18 points and almost 13 rebounds. I think the sky's the limit. I still think there's a lot of room for growth. He continues to work on his right hand because he's so left-hand dominant. When that right hand even becomes stronger than it is now, watch out.
Chris, always great to talk to you. And as we move forward towards the playoffs, it was a heck of a series a few years ago between Toronto and Indiana. We may yet see another one.
I said from an entertainment standpoint, if it was Indiana and Toronto for another seven-game series, I'd be in for that.
That was Pacers voice Chris Denari. When we come back on Hoops, we will shift our attention to a colleague who's been battling. And we'll tell you why and exactly what we mean when we continue on Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Welcome back to Hoops on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. I'm going to shift attention a little bit here. We're going to get back to the Raptors later in the show when Mike Ganter joins Jonesy. Mike, of course, from the Toronto Sun. But our colleague, former NBA player, former college great, former head coach of the Canadian men's national team, longtime Raptors broadcaster from year one, and of course our colleague on Sportsnet, Leo Routens. He's been battling a back issue for the better part of this entire season. He has been hobbled, but over All-Star break, he had surgery. He had back surgery to fix himself. He's back, you know, in the broadcast, back on the mend, back feeling good again, and no pun intended there. And I thought, Jonesy, it would be kind of worth the audience listening into what Leo's been going through and maybe some of the health issues and battles he's had over the course of his life as well. Just kind of a personal story, a feel-good story, and giving you a little background on the man, not just the broadcaster or player. My conversation with Leo Routens.
Leo, before I get to basketball, I found this interesting because, you know, you've been very vocal on social media and certainly in the last few weeks with what you've been dealing with health-wise. We've seen it firsthand on the plane over the course of the season. And you were telling me before the surgery, something I'd never heard before, how you were even marveling at the fact that you've been able to walk in life, let alone have a professional career. Can you take us back to where it started and, you know, how this all kind of came about as a youngster and the health issues you've battled for quite some time?
When I was 11, all of a sudden all these things started to happen to me. And I was playing a lot of ball. I was actually, you know, for my age, doing really well. And all these things started happening. And the pain was bad and this and that. My mom started taking me to all these doctors. Nobody believed her. They thought she was nuts.
Right.
Finally, Sick Kids Hospital, they latched onto me, Dr. Steele, and then Robin Humphreys did surgery on me. And, you know, they gave me a new life, right? But the funny thing is, you know, technology's changed, things have changed, and my back is something I've been able to manage, right? I'm really diligent about working out. I take care of my back. I don't let it get crazy. But over the last few years, I've kind of been feeling, you know, a little, feeling things happening, and then the last 6 months has just been horrible. But it's funny, so because of the last 6 months, I went and got some MRIs, and the reaction from people was crazy. Top surgeons, you know, Alex McKechnie from the Raptors, you know, all these kind of different people said it's the worst thing they've ever seen, which is kind of unnerving. But everybody looks at it and goes, are you kidding me?
But what is it then? Like, what's...
Well, then you realize things that were done. I mean, when I was 11 years old, I had 3 laminectomies. You just, it's not something you, like the doctor told my parents, I may never walk in, I'll never play sports again. And what that does, you know, those are the joints that hold your back together, right? So the first question is, everybody says, how did you play? So it's almost like, how did this happen? Like something, you know, some kind of a blessing. It's weird.
And then, I would have thought it would even have affected your growth. And
exactly, like your, exactly, yeah. Exactly. And then where I get to the point now where, as I said, the doctors will look at it and say, the worst thing they've ever seen. They're going, how are you walking? You know, like it doesn't make sense. Like my wife's telling Doc, you got to tell him to stop working out as much as he does. Doc goes, look, the fact that he's walking, keep doing what you're doing.
Right, right.
So anyway, I found a tremendous surgeon in Miami, actually through Alex McKechnie, and his name is Dr. Dan Cohen, and he's brilliant. Did the surgery, and, you know, he had all kinds of ideas of what he'd want to do, and and in best case, worst case scenarios. And he just said the surgery could not have gone any better. Everything he wanted to do, how he wanted to, he could do everything. He was like a little kid coming out of surgery.
So what did he want to do? What did he have to do in terms of fixing you and alleviating the pain that you've been in?
Well, if you look at the surgical list of what he did, it's incredible. In a nutshell, I got two rods in my back. I got screws. I got spacers. I got all this stuff. He removed a ton of junk.
Folks, I'm gonna jump in quick here. This doesn't play well on radio, but Leo showed me the picture. I'm one of those guys that wants to see this stuff. Most people are like, oh, I don't want it. I wanted to see it. The picture of what came out of his bag. I don't know if you posted it or not, but it was pretty gruesome, the massive chunks that came out of you.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about all kinds of material. I don't even want to know what it is. It's kind of scary. But, you know, he was able to clean it out. And the big thing was, could he take my pain away, right? I had pain in my legs. I had pain in my back, in my neck, all everywhere. And he basically was able to do that and give me he straightened my back out, too. My back was crooked. That's why I think I'm an inch taller right now. I was just standing next to Sam Mitchell, and he goes, you definitely grew in the past 10 days. So, but that can happen when you straighten a curve in the spine. So it went great, and thank God I feel amazing.
So, I mean, are you good now? I mean, you feel good? What's the next step in terms of making sure that, you know, you don't have to do this again?
Well, next step is I'm going back to Miami on Thursday. I'm going to get all the staples and stitches and everything else that's kind of holding me together out, and then just follow whatever protocol he gives me. I'm dying to get back in the gym, but obviously you've got to be smart and do it the right way. And like I said, I'm not worried about it from this point. Like, there was nothing I could do other than surgery, so that's done, and that's taking care of it. So now it's up to me to take care of my body, yeah. And I can do that.
How many surgeries have you had in your life?
It's close to 30. It's between 25 and 30.
Now, over the course of your playing career, anytime you get nervous going under the knife or thinking about, I mean, because you hear from most people, and listen, if you don't have a choice, you don't have a choice. But don't get cut unless you have to get cut. And I mean, that's for most people having one or two. You've had damn near 30 surgeries in your life.
But now put this in perspective. You know, the medicine and the surgical techniques and everything is not, you know, back then wasn't what it is now.
Yeah.
I've had surgeries to repair surgeries. I've had surgeries that created all kinds of issues that led to a whole bunch of other things. So, you know, I had no choice at the time. But that's life. It's just a time. Timing is everything. But you look at now, for example, when I was 11 years old, they cut my whole back open, right? Well, I just came back from surgery where they just did a boatload of stuff. They went through my side, and I got four reasonably small cuts in my back. That's it. I mean, you think about the less invasive you are, the faster you heal, the less damage is done. So, unfortunately, I was a victim of, I guess, time.
Yeah.
The time we were living in. Even when my back was 11-year-old, the techniques for spinal surgery at that stage, I had the best surgeon in Canada, Robin Humphreys at SickKids. But the techniques were so archaic and so really new. You couldn't help it. I'll give you an example of that. I don't know if you ever heard of a myelogram. A myelogram is like a dye.
Okay.
It's a test. They put it in you. It's like putting a dye in your body. But what they used to do is they used to mix it with an oil. And so I had doctors looking at my MRI. Think about it, 48 years later, going, you have this like clumps of stuff that are squeezing everything. That's your old myelogram.
Oh, my God.
So think about that.
Yeah.
Think about, you know, they were doing a test that actually over time makes you worse.
Yeah.
So it's crazy how things have changed.
All right, I'm going to do a total 180 here and actually talk some basketball for a second. I want to start outside the NBA just to give him a little bit of love. We haven't had a chance to have him on the show yet, but at some point we plan to, hope to. I saw you had a nice message about Carl English and getting his jersey retired out east a couple of days ago. And here's a guy when, you know, I don't know about his surgeries, I don't know about his physical ailments over the years, but certainly the miles that he's put in, just to draw some sort of parallel to you, looking for some sort of cliche segue here. He certainly put in a lot of miles and a lot of blood, sweat, and tears for the national program. And to think where the national program is now, trying to finally go, here's a guy that was one of the, you know, stepping stones and one of the guys that helped him get to this point.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Carl English has done so much good. And you talk about a guy that does have miles on him, and he's had a lot of injuries as well, fought through them all. But a player that was – Kyle was part of that bridge, right, where the old guard went away.
Yep.
And you had to kind of bridge the gap until the young kids came up that we're now seeing – in the NBA and everywhere else. And so Carl was part of that, and he's just got a great personality. He's got an incredible history. I mean, the things that he has gone through in his life and the perseverance and drive to be who he is, it's a great story. He came out with a book. It's worth reading for a lot of young people if you want to think about handling adversity. And Carl's just one of those people, you know, an infectious personality. He walks in a room, it's his room. And I just love people like that.
We've seen the Canadian team on the floor, Leo, in the last week, a game down in Oshawa, then down in Dominican. I mean, it's goofy what FIBA's doing, where you got qualifying for one tournament before the Olympics didn't even come, with the Olympic qualifier coming up for Canada in June in Victoria. And then the next set of games after the Olympics, not until November. I don't know what FIBA's doing. I'll leave that aside. Using Carl English as the example, who's the guy in today's program, outside of the stars maybe, that can be one of those guys that can help bridge this thing, that can be a key contributor that maybe we're not talking about, outside of the Gilgeous Alexanders and the Murrays? Who's a guy that you're saying, there's a guy that's maybe not being talked about that could make a real difference?
Well, you know, there's a lot of guys that are playing at a high level in Europe, right? So you look at a Kyle Wiltshire. Here's a 6'10", 6'11", shooter from three, right? That's where the game is going. So, and in FIBA, you're going to have those guys. Kevin Pangos, who played a little bit last summer for Nick Nurse. I mean, Kevin Pangos, he's injured, but here's a player with his FIBA experience and the more talent around him as opposed to last summer would make a big difference. So there's players like that. I could probably name 10 other guys that are on that bridge that could potentially be on the team to help, may not be on the team, depending on the number of NBA guys. And then remember, it's not like, okay, we're just going to take 12 NBA guys. You've got to complement talent, chemistry, personality, the whole bit, and hopefully you get a great group of guys.
All right, one last shift of gears here while we have you. Flip it back to the NBA, Leo. We saw the Milwaukee Bucks in town a couple of nights ago. I actually overheard a conversation you had that night with some of your friends that you had in town talking about Raptors this year versus Raptors last year, and here we are three quarters of the way through the year still, you know, mentioning the name Kawhi Leonard and whatnot. Why is this team, in your estimation, as good, if not better, than last year and set up for this stretch run, let alone set up for, we hope, another long postseason run?
They're champions, and they believe they're champions. They have a championship mentality. They had success on the biggest stage. They were 17-5 without Kawhi. They won games. They were insulted when they won a championship. The people discarded them immediately. So they play with an edge. And you have Masai has done a great job of building a team with players that play have an edge. They don't have all the same personalities on this team. You got a lot of guys here that people gave up on, didn't think they were worth it, didn't draft them, whatever the case may be. Then you added some pieces, you know, Terrence Davis, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, that give you these intangibles. I really believe that this team is as good, if not better, than last year. I think that, you know, players are better. You know, Pascal Siakam is better than last year. Freddie's better than last year. Kyle's better than last year. Marc Gasol came back from his injury the first time, had a bounce in his step that we haven't seen in a while. And if he comes back, and Norm Powell is not the same player. So when you look at this team, it's a better team. And I just, you know, people are talking about, you know, can you maybe catch Milwaukee first? Do you lock in second? I really don't care. Would I like that? Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And we all would, right? But I want to see this team on April 15th, 16th, 17th, whatever that date may be, all guys available, all guys healthy. They know they can win on the road as easy as they can at home, and they play with a passion. So that's the only thing I'm thinking about with this team. Get there healthy.
That was my one-on-one with our colleague from Sportsnet, former NBA player, former national team player, and national team head coach Leo Routens. When we come back, shifting our attention back to the NBA, back to the Toronto Raptors, Jonesy will be put to work as he chats with Mike Ganter from the Toronto Sun. Comes up next on Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Welcome back to Hoops on Sportsnet 590. Fan Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. I think we're a little bit tight on time, Jones. We're going to get right to it. You had a chance earlier today to go one-on-one with Mike Ganter from the Toronto Sun.
Mike, let's talk about this part of the season as we wind towards the playoffs. First off, I think many of our colleagues, particularly south of the border, never saw this team doing what they did. I don't know if I saw 15 in a row at one point. I don't know if I saw them better than last year. But I certainly didn't see them as a team that would be struggling to make the playoffs. They were good before Kawhi got here. The developmental part of the team has had this club good now. It had them good during that time, good enough to develop some of those guys and trade them for good pieces. So where do you stand on the kind of overall right now before we look ahead to what the season's been like for them?
Yeah, no, they've been, They're ahead of pretty much everybody's projections, I think, maybe except for their own. I mean, you were in training camp. I mean, they were talking then, like, look, everybody wanted to talk about Kawhi's gone and Danny's gone and how are you gonna make it through, and every single one of them were like, look, we're good.
Yeah.
We know we're good. And it didn't really, I mean, you heard it, but you didn't really take it in like that. And then you see these guys play and you see them just withstand injury after injury, yes, after injury, yes. And they're, I mean, it, you know, if you don't believe in this team now, you're never going to believe in them, because they're good, and they're good playing with, you know, missing parts, and when those parts come back, they're going to be better.
We know, Michael, that there's a like another phase to the season. Once you get past the All-Star break, heading mm-hmm. toward the playoffs, you're refining. Overkill on the health issue.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the biggest thing is getting their offense down pat. I think we saw that against Milwaukee. I mean, Milwaukee won that game shooting under 40%, and it was just that Toronto couldn't score at the other end.
Yeah, I mean, that game was a bit of I don't want to say it was a one-off, but it really was a one-off. They're not going to shoot that poorly from three again. Yeah. Like, I don't believe that. I mean, it was, what was it, Kyle, Fred, and... I think it was Kyle, Fred, and Pascal were combined, like, you know, maybe they touched 30%. That's not them. So that's like, they're going to be better than that. But you're right. It is the offense, but it's the half court offense.
Right. Exactly.
And it's just all it is movement. Like, there was I forget who wrote it. There was a good piece. It might have been Raptors Republic, but it was, and I forget the writer. I apologize, but it was really well done in that, you know, they just took Matt Thomas and they singled him out and they said, look, and they clip the videos and they go, here he is doing this, here he is doing this, and you watch him, and Nick mentioned this earlier in the year. He said, you know, we all look at Matt Thomas and we say, spot up 3-point shooter, you know. He is so much more than that. And
I call him J.J. Redick Light. He really is to me, and that's I know that's one of the guys that the team has had him watch.
Yeah, I mean, he's moving and cutting, and I mean, even his defense is better than it was. I don't know what he did in that month off. I mean, I know he worked a lot with Brittany, but his just staying in front of guys, he is so much more confident about that. So, I mean, you know, but... So you take that in put it off to the side, and that's Matt Thomas, and he's getting better.
Yeah.
They may not even need it. Like, I think they are going to need his shooting, but there may not be room for him come, you know, end of the year when everybody's healthy again, assuming everybody gets healthy. There are so many options on this team that it's. I mean, you mentioned it yourself. I mean, coming into the season, it's like, okay, Kyle's back and Mark's back and Fred's back, and you know, you got Norm coming back. We didn't even know Terrence Davis was going to be what Terrence Davis is. And then you add Matt Thomas, and there's just...
Chris Boucher,
Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. All these guys that you really didn't think, you know, you didn't expect too much. You thought, they're all NBA players, don't get me wrong, but you didn't know what you were going to get. And I think they've all overperformed, like, or outperformed their projections anyway.
Mike, to your point, in that game against Milwaukee, we saw in the second quarter when Kyle was in there with... Matt Thomas, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Terrence Davis. They had Kyle and four bench guys in there, Chris Boucher, and they made a run. And I thought it was interesting that Nick Nurse never went back to that. And that had me thinking, this works. Let's put it in our pocket for later. And we know that Nick tends to do that. And to your point about Matt Thomas, I just love the energy the kid plays with. And when he's out there moving, it seems to be contagious. And everybody else gets into that, too, with the quick ball movement. And that's when they're at their best.
Yeah. You know when I know Matt Thomas is going well? When Kyle starts looking for him.
Yes.
And Kyle was looking for him. And, I mean, Kyle's no dummy. He finds the hot hand, and he'll go to him. And, I mean, it was just another example of this team having something else to go to. And, I mean, we talk about – it's funny because the team that was in town that night, Milwaukee, everybody talks about their depth being improved. Nobody's really talking about Toronto's depth being improved. And, I mean, you know, yes, you lost two starters, but you gained a whole bunch of guys and a whole bunch of options. Now, can Chris Boucher do what he's doing now in the playoffs? We don't know yet, but every indication says he's handled every challenge to date. So, well, let's see what happens.
And it's interesting, Mike, that you say that. People always look at that because, to me, Milwaukee's still, well, in a sense, unproven in the playoffs, too. Yeah. They had a two-game lead, ready to put Toronto away at 3-0. And then lost four straight. So the worm can turn very quickly. I want to ask you about the East. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of jockeying. As well as the Raptors have played, they're only a game in the loss column as we record this ahead of the Celtics. 3-6 is going to be such a minefield. How do you see the East shaking out? I mean, you look at Toronto, Boston, Philly's hurt now, but Indiana's still going well. Miami seems to have dipped a bit, but we still got 20-odd games to go.
Yeah, no, I still think it goes Milwaukee and then Toronto, Boston, and I still think Miami. I know they're not going real well right now, but and part of it is injury, but, I mean, I still like that team. They play like Toronto.
Yes.
They play hard. They're physical.
And they have some more experience now with the trade.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, and Jimmy Butler's got something to prove. Like he is out to show the NBA. Like, look, man, I can make a team my own, and they can roll with me. And I like that team a lot. I mean, I think if the Raptors match up against them, that's going to be one of the if it's not Milwaukee, that's the toughest matchup.
Right.
I may be underselling Boston here because Jason Tatum all of a sudden is like a 3-point god again, or for now, has been for the entire month. So they're going good, and you know, I mean, that seems to be more addition, or you know, they've done well because Kyrie's no longer there, you know, dominating the ball, and the guys that they need dominating the ball, guys like Tatum, guys like Brown, guys like Kemba, and again, injuries right now, Kemba's out, but they're a really good team. So to me, it's Milwaukee and then those three. I'm not sold on Indiana. Maybe it's because Toronto seems to handle Indiana.
It could be an issue for somebody, though, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 100%. And we haven't seen Oladipo as Oladipo yet. Like, he has not he's not come all the way back. And I don't think it's fair to expect that he would be. I mean, he missed a whole year. It's going to take some time. And missed Paul George took a long time to come back, to get back to his level. But if Oladipo gets back to that level by the playoffs, yes, they're a definite contender.
All right, Michael, just before we go with Mike Ganter of the Toronto Sun and Post Media, Mike, the indication is that Pascal is going to be the guy going forward. My question has always been, can he do it in the playoffs the way Kawhi did last year in terms of orchestrating the tenor of the game to the point where the Raptors could control the tempo? They can throw it to a guy and say, get us a bucket. That, to me, is not... That's the biggest question going forward. Do you concur with that?
Yeah, this isn't me bad-mouthing Pascal's chances at that, of doing that. I just think it's too early to expect that.
Right.
I mean, that like, you need to go through it a few times and
True.
See that man
True.
Before you know how to do it. So he's going to need some help. But like, I'm not that worried about it because he's still going to get his, like, he may not be that much of the focal point, like the way Kawhi was.
Right, right.
But as long as he's among that elite group.
Like, and he's got help.
Kyle's there. Fred's there. I mean, Norm always comes up big in the playoffs. Yeah. Marc Gasol is just a stud. Like, he doesn't get enough. Him and Serge, both the bigs here, do not get enough recognition. They're strong guys, and they are good in the playoffs. And this is where Pascal isn't yet. They're mature players. They know. They've been there. They've seen it. Pascal's still growing. And this is not, like, again, not a knock on him. Just, I think it's a bit much to expect it right now.
Michael, always good to talk to you. It's going to be interesting to watch as we get towards the warm weather and the playoffs in April.
Thanks, Paul.
That was Jonesy in conversation with the Toronto Sun's Mike Ganter. Again, tomorrow night, Raptors-Hornets. You can see the game on Sportsnet. It's the final of a four-game homestand, the longest homestand of the season for the Raptors. The team then departs on Saturday for a five-game Western Conference road trip, starting in Denver, then heading to Phoenix, on to Golden State to play the Warriors with Steph Curry likely back in the lineup. And then from there, the Raptors will head to Sacramento and Utah to close out the five-game trip over the course of 10 days. We're back next Thursday for another edition of Hoops on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.